Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast hosted at podfeed.com. Today is Sunday, December 11th, 2005, and this is show number 21. I'm going to start with something unusual today. The PodSafe Music Network has created a PodSafe Christmas carol called If Every Day Were Christmas. The problem with Christmas carols is that they're all licensed music, so you can't play them on a podcast without paying licensing and royalty fees, and there's not a real good way to do that on podcasts yet. So a bunch of people got together and decided to create a Christmas carol just for podcasts. This song is a collaboration of 32 singers from 9 countries, and these guys never even got together in the same room. A composer named Slow, I think that's the way you pronounce it, or Slaw, something like that. Anyway, he created the song, and he collaboratively pulled together all the tracks from all these different people and made this show. And the song is, again, is called If Every Day Were Christmas, and it's part of what they're calling PodSafe for Peace. And if you like this song and you buy it, all of the proceeds are going to go to UNICEF, which aids children in need all around the world. This was, I guess it was also co-written by Orlando Pagan. Anyway, it's a gorgeous song, and I would like to play it for you now.
First winter snow outside my window, feels like that time again to me.
The mistletoe, a Christmas show, and the lighting of that famous Christmas tree, yeah.
People are shopping for their loved ones and making plans for a Christmas feast. But it all goes by in the blink of an eye,
and then we have to wait another year.
Every day.
Well, if you like that and you want to benefit a worthy cause, head over to the PodSafe for Peace homepage and buy it for a dollar. There's a link in the show notes. Listener Dan left a great comment on the podfeet.com website last week. He said that he was listening to the show and got to the part where I did a review of Pandora, which is a music station. And he was reading along in the show notes at the same time, so he clicked on the link and he went over to Pandora to check it out. But since it was a music section, he had to go and pause NoSilicast. And he said he never went back. He said, at least the first half of my podcast was pretty fun, but he recommended that if I'm putting something really good in there that uses audio, maybe I should put it towards the end. Uh-oh, looks like I disobeyed his advice already by playing PodSafe for Peace. Oh well, as long as you're enjoying yourself, it's all good. Well, I want to do a little review on an application called iScroll 2. The new Mac laptops, after June of 2005, allow the user to use two fingers to scroll windows using the trackpad. This sounds kind of funky, but it's actually a pretty cool feature. So you just drag your two fingers instead of one up and down, and then the scroll bar on the right goes up and down. It turns out all three of our laptops in my house were bought before this feature became available, even the one we bought in June of 2005. So luckily there's a cool utility called iScroll 2 written by RazFaz that allows two-fingered scrolling in earlier iBooks and PowerBooks. I've been using iScroll 2 for about a week now, and I think it's pretty useful. For some reason, it seems tedious now to drag my cursor all the way over to the scroll bar and hold down the click button and drag with my other finger. I find that the vertical scroll works in this tool really well most of the time, but the horizontal scroll is kind of hit and miss. I find that it doesn't actually always work. I was reading a little bit in his notes, and I think it might have been because I was using Firefox, and Firefox usually interprets that kind of scrolling as a back command, so maybe that's why it didn't do anything. I was probably on a page where there was no back, and I didn't figure that out. It also features circular scrolling, but I'm too lazy to go read up on it and find out what the heck that's for. I really should get around to testing all the features, but once it started working for vertical scrolling, I moved on. You know me, the next shiny toy must have caught my attention and I forgot all about it. Anyway, there's a link in the show notes to RazFaz iScroll 2 webpage in the show notes, so go check it out for yourself. Speaking of hacks to your system, my research department, Niraj, found another fun one. The newest iMacs are being billed as media center devices, and it's primarily because of a new piece of software called Front Row. This application brings all four media applications together into one snazzy interface: music, photos, movies, and DVDs. There's a good set of instructions on Andrew Escobar's website if you're interested in doing this. This one is not for the faint of heart. It involved downloading three different things, one of which is a package installer called Pacifist, which is a paid-for product. You can use it for 30 days to do this hack if you want. But I'm not even sure why this was required, but I sure couldn't open the Front Row package without it. So I followed the instructions, and it worked pretty well. And before you even think about doing this, realize that it could render your Mac unstable, because this is a pretty deep hack. Overall, the graphics are really cool on Front Row. It shows reflections of the icons on a virtual tabletop, sort of like what you can see in three-way iChat conversations if you've ever seen a picture of how that looks. And it makes neato noises when you switch between the applications. The iMac comes with a remote control that allows the user to switch between the four applications, but of course I have to use the arrow keys and the carriage return, so it's not quite as slick as all that. I did notice that when I selected some music and then switched over to the photo section, the music continued to play. That could make a slideshow more interesting, but I was never able to figure out how to get the music to stop. I finally did a force quick, and that shut the darn thing up. Overall, it's an interesting hack if you just want to see what all the fuss is about, but I didn't really find it all that useful to me. By the way, it occurred to me that every review I was doing was enthusiastic and told you how this was the greatest, coolest thing ever. And I was afraid you'd think that I think everything's wonderful, but that's not true. It's just that I've only been telling you about things that I like. I figure, why should I tell you, hey, check this out, it stinks. But this is a way, by doing the review of Front Row that didn't thrill me all that much, I thought that would show you that I don't love everything that I try. Well, I'm sure all you PC folks out there have enjoyed playing with Google Earth. That's the application that Google bought from a company called Keyhole, or Keyhole might have been the application, but it's basically great, great satellite imagery of the entire Earth, I think. I'm assuming it's Earth. I should check that out. Anyway, at least the United States, but it allows you to zoom in to a particular address and see just amazing photographs of all kinds of things beyond what you see in Google Maps. It actually allows you to tilt things, and you can even zoom down inside the Grand Canyon. You can go into the depths of it. It's really, really amazing. But I'm sure you PC folks have enjoyed this while the poor Mac second-class citizens have had to drool over your shoulders with envy. I've actually tried to pretend that it's not that cool and, you know, act blasé about it because it's like, well, yeah, sure, I know about that. But it really bugged me that I couldn't have it. Just this weekend, my research department, Niraj, alerted me to the fact that it was finally released. Huzzah! He transferred the file to me and it works great. It's kind of a bit of a resource hog, but now I too can zoom in on my childhood home and bore my friends with details of how my driveway was made. Here's the weird part. Evidently, this file that Niraj found was not supposed to be released, and it was suddenly pulled from the virtual shelves of the internet. In any case, it will be soon released to the masses, I suspect, because this beta runs really well, so it's awfully close. So stay tuned for the real release. It's time for our weird and wacky website of the week. Hey, that's www. My son loves a site called solardeathray.com. I don't mean to disparage the male gender here, but I just suspect that maybe some men came up with this idea. These guys took a bunch of small square mirrors and glued them to a piece of plywood, all at angles so that they focused the reflection of the sun to a single small point. And then they burned stuff with it. It's a great site filled with photos and stories of what they burned, why they chose those items, and how enjoyable the actual burning was. They sneak some nice science into the site, showing diagrams on how the optics work, and suggestions for other science-related sites, but they never take the focus off, well, pun intended, never take the focus off of the true objective, which is burning stuff. Just glancing at the gallery, I see a honey bear, a pirate ship, a baby doll, Darth Vader, a Nintendo 64 cartridge, and Jiffy Pop popcorn. Lots more there. That's just a little sampling of what I saw. One of the funniest ones that they did was the Xbox box, and you just have to read the description of this one to get the full enjoyment. If you become a big fan of SolarDeathRay.com, you can even buy a t-shirt from them. I think one of the reasons I like SolarDeathRay.com so much is that when I was a child, you know, everybody got a magnifying glass and tried to burn up ants with it, right? And you could maybe burn a little bit of a smoky hole into a piece of paper, that kind of thing. But my father took it up a notch when, I'm not sure how he got these, but he got a hold of a couple of parabolic reflectors that I think they were from an airplane manufacturing plant. Like these were supposed to be the inside cowling of where the headlamps go. But he brought these home, and it turns out these were just fantastic at burning things. If you put a piece of paper and slid the paper up until the spot focused into a single spot, you could instantly light it on fire. And I don't mean just a little tiny, you know, smoke going on, but this thing would light on fire. So my brother Kelly and I used to burn all kinds of cool stuff. I think we actually started a fire once, and we got thought that was kind of dangerous and stopped playing around with it. All right, back to more serious work. A couple of weeks ago, I did a VNC tutorial for the Mac and the PC, and recently, I found out that OS X Tiger actually has VNC server capability built right into the operating system. You don't actually have to download an application to be a server. MacMiniColo.net gives a great tutorial, complete with nice screenshots showing how to set it up. The guy really took some time and made a nice site that really gives great instructions on how to do it. Turns out this feature is actually part of the sharing preference pane, and it's really easy to turn on and set up. Remember that in order to access this Mac with VNC, the driving PC or Mac will still need the client software. It's just the server software you don't have to set up. Here's a quick little tip of a neat feature in Apple's address book. If you right-click on an address in your address book, the pop-up menu includes an option, Map Of. If you select this, it takes you to that address in MapQuest. I never knew that was there. I saw that on, Leo Laporte's TV show in Canada. So, pretty cool little tip. Brian Toth also wrote a plugin for the address book that gives an additional option to map it in Google Maps. Pretty slick feature. There's a link to Brian Toth's plugin in the show notes. One thing I've figured out on the Mac is that if something is too hard, that means you're doing it wrong. Let me give you an example. I've always done my Christmas card labels through an elaborate process, starting with my addresses in the Palm desktop software. I export them to a comma delimited file, a CSV file. I pull that into Excel, give it column headings, make sure all the pieces are there the way I want them, and then I move it from there over to Word. Then I set up a Word merge file, and by selecting Avery labels, you can have those columns merged into the labels, and then I can print it. Overall, this ends up with about 4 or 5 total files created and about 2 hours of screwing around with it to get it done. I've been doing it this way for years, so I know it's a good path. Well, in the last year, I converted from the Palm desktop to using the Apple address book. So I opened address book this year, and I searched in vain for an export command. I was looking for that export to CSV, but the only one I could find was to export to a vCard format, which was unreadable by Word. I searched Apple support pages and found the oddest thing. Address book will print straight to Avery labels. No export necessary, no Excel to Word conversion, no mail merge document crud. Just print the darn things. As my kids would say, woot woot! It was very exciting when I found that. Took me no time at all to have nice address labels. One thing to watch out for, though, is I noticed that I had 63 labels I was going to make, 63 addresses, but when I printed it, it said it was only 59, and I was trying to figure out why. Well, it turned out four of those people didn't actually have valid addresses, so it simply did not choose them, which is actually a better option that it doesn't print it and waste your time, but if you didn't notice that, you might miss those four poor people. Another great example of when it's too hard, you're doing it wrong, was when my husband and I wanted to stick a second hard drive into his G4 years ago. We opened her up and found the tray it had to go in, but the screws that go in from the sides into the drive were buried way back in and nearly unreachable by a screwdriver. Oh well, we cursed and clipped our knuckles, and we tried a really short screwdriver, and that wouldn't reach, and we were considering going to the hardware store to get a flexible screwdriver, when my husband said, wait a minute, this is a Mac. We must just be doing something wrong. So we sat back, and we just gazed at it, thinking, what would make it easier? He reached in, folded the ribbon cable back, and there's a single screw facing straight up, completely accessible. Simply removing that one screw pulls the whole mechanism out, giving easy access to the drive screws. Remember this lesson if you're ever finding things just a little too hard on a Mac. If it's too hard, you're doing it wrong. Hey, last week I asked folks if they could vote on Podcast Alley for NoSillaCast, and a couple of people did, and my rank went from 5,900 to 792 with just those few votes. Must be a lot of people like me who had never asked for any votes at all, so we all sit there down at the bottom. I promise not to bug you guys about this all the time, because this could get really old if it were in every podcast, so maybe the first of every month would be a good time for me to ask you to vote, since the stats are collected monthly. So I won't mention it again this month, I promise. However, since I've already brought it up, if you wouldn't mind pushing the Vote on Podcast Alley link at podfeet.com, that sure would be cool. Takes you right to my voting page, and you can see whether I'm above 792 now or if I've slipped back down again. Well, it looks like that's going to wrap it up for the NoSillaCast this week. As always, feedback is welcome at allison@podfeet.com. Sure hope to hear from you, and I hope your holiday shopping is going well. Stay safe, and thanks for listening.